From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
My family moved to the west side of Detroit. We lived on the north end, but we moved to the west side during the senior year. But I wanted to be with my friends, and it was before it was a requirement that you go to school in your own district. So my parents allowed me to take 3 buses to get to Pershing, and I would hang out with my friends, and then I had 3 more buses from 7 Mile and Ryan to get to 12 Mile and Mound Road. And I'm telling you, John, along the way, the habit that I had encountered with my ability to go from one place to the other, the bus drivers expected me and would wait for me. Mm-hmm. When I got to 8 Mile in Van Dyke, I had to take a suburban bus,
right?
You know, to get down to 12 Mile Road, but there was a hamburger joint right there on the corner. And this guy would make hamburgers and stuff for me every day. And the bus drivers would wait for me. They would drop me off at locations so that I wouldn't have to walk across a busy road.
Jeanette Abraham, founder, president, and CEO of JMA Global LLC, a 100% minority and woman-owned company. Abraham spent the majority of her career working for General Motors Corporation from the time she was a 16-year-old co-op student attending Pershing High School in Detroit, Michigan. It was there where she was nurtured and earned both her undergraduate and graduate degrees. She spent many years in leadership roles as part of GM's management team. In 2000, Abraham purchased a 51% ownership in Detroit Heavy, a supplier of fasteners such as bolts and screws to the automotive industry. In 2001, she founded JMA Logistics, a multi-million-dollar Tier 1 Detroit automotive supplier. Abraham is one of the top 10 African-American female entrepreneurs in the country. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, JMA Global LLC with founder, president, and CEO Jeanette Abraham, Part 2, In Black America.
When I got off of the podium there speaking, Chuck O'Brien came over to me and he says, I'm going to call you. I want to speak to you. And so his wife later told me that when I was speaking, he said to her, she's the one. Like, he picked me to be his partner in business because of my work ethic and the things that I had done. And then he enticed me further by saying, this opportunity is yours if you want it, because I'm not asking anybody else. What do you do with that? You go, wow. So I did. I believe intuitively that things that are for me may not be for everybody. I feel when it's right or when I should lay back and if I should go or no go. And so I told him I'm going to need some time, you know, just to pray about this.
Jeanette Abraham is in a league of her own as one of the only African-American female automotive suppliers in the automobile industry. As the founder and president of JMA Global LLC, a multi-million-dollar Tier 1 Detroit automotive supplier, she has earned titles like Trailblazer, Living Legend, and Top 10 Entrepreneurs in the Nation. Starting out as a 16-year-old John J. Pershing High School co-op student with General Motors, Abraham has shown that determination and hard work can lead to a successful career in the automotive industry. Her company supplies fasteners to General Motors, Ford, Stellantis, and other auto suppliers around the world. Abraham has changed the game by getting a seat at the table dominated by men in the past. She has built a company that has stood the test of time. She is driven by a desire to allow people, like herself, a chance to grow and make a good living. Today, JMA Global is certified by the Michigan Minority Supplier Development Council and the Women Business Enterprise National Council. On today's program, we conclude our conversation with Jeanette Abraham.
I would mentor his company, and he would show me how to read a blueprint. And when the grinding is on here, and here's where this finish, and here's the tolerances, you know, he's just going through everything. And you just never know, John, why you're getting information, because everything that you hear today may not be for you today. And you have to be resourceful enough to treat your brain like a library shelf and just research things that you've heard, things that you know, and use them when they're best able to be used. And so Chuck O'Brien said to me after he passed away and we were at the funeral and I spoke on behalf of GM and talked about the integrity of the company and the kind of man he was and everything. And so When I got off of the podium there speaking, Chuck O'Brien came over to me and he says, I'm going to call you. I want to speak to you. And so his wife later told me that when I was speaking, he said to her, she's the one. Like, he picked me to be his partner in business because of my work ethic and the things that I had done. And then he enticed me further by saying, this opportunity is yours if you want it, because I'm not asking anybody else. What do you do with that?
I know, that's right.
You go, wow. So I did. I believe intuitively that things that are for me may not be for everybody. I feel when it's right or when I should lay back and if I should go or no go. And so I told him I'm going to need some time, you know, just to pray about this.
But you needed
3 days.
But you needed more than time. You need to come up with $1 million, didn't you?
Well, of course I did, and that was the scary part. But I didn't know that at the time. I was like, I wasn't even that far ahead of the game. I just said, wow, okay. And so then after I made up my mind and said, okay, I'll do this, what's the next step?
Mm-hmm.
And then it hit me. I was like, well, what is it going to cost me to buy into the business? And he says, well, whatever we pay the widow out will be your buy-in amount. And it was $1 million, to your point. And I was like, am I $1 million credit worthy person? Heck no. You know, who's going to give me $1 million? But I'm talking about favor once again, you know, just the, you know, I'm obedient and strict with myself, and I try to follow through. I try to walk the talk and do the things that I say I'm going to do, because my dad always told me that, you know, if you give your word is your bond. You must do this. You must do that. And so those things still today ring in my ear. But I go to that bank, and they tell me, listen, come in on the side door. This is in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in through the side door. There's a parking lot back there. You know, the attendant is back there. Just tell them you have a meeting with us. And I'm thinking, nobody goes in the bank at the side door. But I go into the side door. They say, go in, take the elevator to the second floor. Somebody will be waiting for you.
Mm.
Well, Chuck O'Brien was in there, too, because all along he's orchestrating my coming out, if you will. And unbeknownst to me, because it was an area that I had never been in that aspect where I was the candidate for something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get up there. The receptionist stands up. She points down. She says, go down here, go to the right. And so the branch manager stood there in the doorway, and he waved his hand. She said, that's him. He's waving his hand. So I go down there, and everybody's smiling. Can I get you a cup of coffee? And I'm like, no, I don't want anything. I told the people at work I was going to a meeting, you know. So I get in there, and he starts smiling, and he says, we've heard so much about you, and we really respect Chuck O'Brien so much. And, you know, everything he touches is like the Midas touch, and we believe in him, and he believes in you, so we believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
And we've decided to give you $1 million that you need to buy into the business. Well, it was 51% of the business, right?
Mm-hmm.
My knees were shaking like crazy.
I knew they were.
I was like, did this guy just say he's going to give me $1 million? You know, it's better than the lottery. And so I'm sitting down, and my knees are literally shaking, and I'm like, oh, my God. And so I was really cool, and they said, well, you know, is everything all right? And I said, yeah. And so the branch manager said, he said, listen, you got to do me a favor. I said, what is that? He says, you know the application that we gave you? And I said, yes. And he says, I'm going to need you to fill it out because, you know, my ASS is going to be grass if somebody finds out I gave you $1 million, you didn't fill out an application. And so, you know, I said, yes, of course, I'll get it done. And I did. And I'm telling you, it has just been the experience of my life. So 1 year after I'm there, you know, Chuck is teaching me things. He's teaching me how to read a balance sheet. He's telling me what the industry standards are. He's telling me what percentage of value and profit that you need to make on a company in order to call yourself viable. He's showing me what to look at, how to hire people, what to do, this, that, and the other. And so one day he said, look at your balance sheet and tell me where you spend most of your money. I said, wow. I said, I spend annually $1.5 million just on warehousing and distribution.
Mm.
And he said, so you could do that, right? And so I'm thinking, I'm only in this business for 1 year. What is he talking about? And then I said, well, I already have this business. And that's when he said to me, I'm going to need you to think bigger. And that's what I use and tell people all the time, that you really do need to think bigger. You need to believe that you can. Because if you don't have any energy in your mind and your heart of your viability to take one step forward, sometimes you have to take one step backwards. Sometimes you have to take two, but you have to still be persistent in the goal of being the best that you can be. Because failure, how many times have people been failed and said no to? I mean, Magic Johnson is one. He talks about how many times he was told no before he got a yes. There is a yes there, but the tenacity in you can't be beat down. You have to keep moving forward. And so as a result of that, I opened up, you know, JMA. JMA stands for Jeanette Marie Abraham. Some people think, you know, who is the J and the M? I said, they're all me, the J, the M, and the A. I just named my company my initials, and that was back in 2001. So that was 21 years ago. Now, it has been turbulent from time to time. We've gone up and down. The business has grown, come down. We've been at threat. We've, you know, reduced work hours. We went from two shifts to one. I mean, all of the signs of, oh, my God, were there. But I just have a lot of faith that I was intended to be here and be around and to be successful. So failure is not an option for me. I just have to keep pushing. And I can't tell you how much I've learned over the years. You know, people said, oh, my God, you're so glib. You know so many things. But I've experienced so many things, you know, over these years. You know, I started in 1968 at GM. You know, if I hadn't left, I probably would have been retired, and who knows what else I would have been doing. But I am thrilled that my employees are long-term, that I have been able to provide all these years for them and their families. And to me, I take that extremely seriously.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you about, you know, having that responsibility and being able to provide a living for your employees.
It's been phenomenal. Many times an agent who handles our insurances and things like, they said, small companies don't give this much to people. And I said, I know. I understand what you're saying. However, you know, it's important to me to make sure that I'm at least competitive when I can be. And the experiences that the people have and the respect that I am able to get from them is just pretty phenomenal. You know, I know their families. You know, I see the pictures of the grandkids.
Right.
You know, we do things. It's just, you know, it's just been so far just a beautiful journey. And, you know, and back in 2008 and 2009 when the economy really got really messed up, I don't, you know, I was telling myself, Jeanette, where have you been? Like, didn't you know this was coming? It seemed to just knock me upside my head. All of a sudden things were horrible, you know, and I was like, what the heck? And so I sold my interest at Detroit Heading at that time. But from 2001 till the end of 2008, I actually ran two companies. You know, this company is small. It's under 10 employees, but my other company had more than 100 employees. And so I've had the knowledge of big versus small and the differences of things that you do and how you do them. But when you tell people that they're your biggest resource, you have to treat them with respect. And I don't tend to fly off the handle, but I'm told that when I am direct, which I am often, they say that, I think you just cussed me out or something, but I just don't know. I mean, you didn't raise your voice or anything, but, you know, like, how did you do that to me? And I just try to do it respectfully. And I always tell people that I hired you to do a particular thing, so please don't bring your problems to me unless you have a solution to go with it. I'll work with you to resolve it, but I can't be everything. And if you don't want to participate in this, then we're not a good team, and it's not going to work. And so I'm really proud of the fact that these guys have hung in there with me and been around for so long. It's really a blessing.
You're listening to In Black America with John L. Hansen, Jr. We'll be back with more of our conversation in just a moment.
We're tracing the decisions that gave us the housing situation we have in Austin today. In Growth Machine, how Austin engineered its housing market. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to this episode of In Black America Ms. Abraham, looking back, a lot of school systems around the country are eliminating or have eliminated the co-op program that got you to where you are today. What are we missing from those programs because they have been discontinued?
Well, one other thing that I do on the side is that for the last 13 years or 14, I've been the chairperson of the National Association of Black Suppliers Scholarship Fund. I think we've given away so far $1.6 million to students who graduate from high school just to give them a kickstart. Mm-hmm. Many of them have never gone to college before. They have no example of that in their homes. And as you saw in the title of NABSSF, it's Black Suppliers, because our children and families never typically get a chance to go that route, and they don't always see someone in their families to mimic. And so we would have mentors groom, if you will, students and companies like General Motors, Stellantis, Ford has taken our students and given them co-op programs and hired them in many aspects. You know, many of them come back. They help out as we interview students. In fact, we have another round coming up in May where we are looking at applications and we're bringing the students in. They have a quote. They talk to us about their life, where they'd like to go, what their volunteerism has been like, which is a little bit difficult these days because of COVID. Things have really kind of shut down for them. But we are gearing up again on an active mentoring program so that many of the people who are donating funds to help educate the students are now saying, okay, we'll bring them in and we'll help. You know, help get them, help teach them, you know, understand the environment and to be serious about what they're doing. And it has been quite the reward. And so I can't be what that is for everybody, but our scholarship program is different because we actually make sure that you have to give us your grades before you get your next funds going to the college. So your grade is like no ticky, no laundry. And if you're not doing well, we put you on probation. We have events during the year and retreats and things of the kind just to make sure that we stay engaged with the students and have a connectivity to let them know that someone is expecting better of you and will hold you accountable, so give it your best. And so I can't do all of it, but I do a portion of it through this avenue, and it is quite the reward.
Couple of more questions, Ms. Abraham. Do you see anyone else doing what you do?
No. That doesn't mean they're not doing it, John. I don't see anybody who touches and hold on to people the way that we do.
Okay.
A lot of people, you can get scholarship money, but they won't hold you accountable. Mm. You can flunk, you can do this, that, or the other, and you can still get the money. If you flunk and don't give it your best and have an expectation, we're going to give you a chance. We ask you to participate and to communicate. You know, when we get your grades and they're not good, we call and say, what's going on? Are you partying too much? Are you getting your homework done? Are you taking too many classes? And we have further found that when we bring them in annually with their retreat, that instead of us talking to them, you know, the grown folks, like we're their parents, that they get way more from the upper class students who have been through the program already, who come back and give of themselves to show them. When I was going to Michigan State, this happened. You know, I went away to a HBCU and I found this rewarding for this reason. I got a chance to travel abroad and this is what I did. Who's going to what school? Why don't you guys all sit and talk together, because you can really be each other's friends. And so we started sitting back and going like, that's the ticket. You know, instead of talking at them, we get someone to talk with them who have been in that same experience, and they are listening so attentively. I said, that was the ticket there. So it's really quite beneficial. I mean, I feel like we're all passing through, right? And I want to make a valuable contribution. You know, I want to be memorable and give it my best, because I can't take anything with me. I came in here with nothing in this world, and that's exactly how I'm going to leave, with nothing. And so I might as well share and give it up, because the replenishment has avoided many of the voids for me that most people might encounter in life. And so, you know, I don't brag about it and I don't expect it, but I flow in the essence of expectation. And, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. I believe that.
Speaking of not bragging, how do you handle the titles Trailblazer and Living Legend?
Amazingly so. Do you know, in 2018, I got the Living Legend Award, and the auto show was here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put me on their Facebook page and everything. They were like, who is this woman? Nobody ever heard of her before, because I was flying under the radar quite purposely.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 2003, when Black Enterprise named me as one of the top 10 women.
Right.
I just thought, wow, you know, like the company at the time that I owned was close to a $50 million company, but, you know, I was just kind of flowing at it all and trying to really kind of stay under the radar, because once I got myself on that magazine, I had one of an African-American entrepreneur said, he says, listen, just stay under the radar. Don't report on cranes and all these numbers, because mm-hmm. before you know it, the IRS is going to come after you. And it was so funny, because I got a call that next year for an audit, and it was just so funny. So I said to my accountant, I said, okay, this is what they're talking about. And so I go, and they seek me out. They nominate me for this Living Legend Award, and they dug up so much information on me. Some of the things that the gentleman was saying as he announced me, he kept asking people, he says, that requires an applause. I mean, like probably a half dozen times. And so my family was there, and importantly, my granddaughter, she was like 7 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just amazed. And so even today, she will tell people that she calls me Gigi. She says, you know, my Gigi is a living legend. And they mm-hmm. says, well, who told you that? And she says, people. Everybody knows this. People. like, don't you know it? Duh. So... you know, it makes me so proud, you know, to be able to be acknowledged. And Alex Rodriguez was our keynote speaker mm-hmm, that year mm-hmm. for the Living Legend. And, you know, it's just nice to have people say, I'm really proud of you. Congratulations. And, you know, and I met Jesse Jackson when I got the Trailblazer Award for Operation Push. And he's like, where have you been? And I said, I've been here just mm-hmm. doing my thing, you know. And when I think about all of the years and the things that I've done, you know, many of them are behind me, but there's so much more still ahead of me. There's so much more of me to be able to give. And so I'm always thinking about, you know, what's next and what can you do again? And then I just recently was nominated, and the local reporter here on Channel 4 did an article, not an article, but actually an interview that's been televised. And now they are taking excerpts, and it's on TV several times a day. And so people are calling me saying, what is this thing? I keep seeing a commercial of you. And I said, just go to YouTube. It'll just come up. I said it was a really great interview, and it made me proud, to be honest with you. So
I viewed yeah. that interview, and I want to talk
you
to
did?
You. I want to talk to you about the picture.
Which one?
The one that has all the minority auto suppliers.
Oh yeah,
talk
yeah.
to the, because I saw Dave Bing in that picture, which
Dave
I spoke
Bing
with
was there.
Some years ago. So how proud
yeah.
of you of that city? Because there's
so
only
excited.
Two women. There's only two women in the picture.
The one woman was our mistress of ceremony, who
okay.
is Rhonda Walker,
mm-hmm.
who does the WDIV. So I was indeed the only woman entrepreneur who
Got
did
you.
Like things like these guys did. But they were all interested singularly in their companies as CEOs of their companies to do something for students and
mm-hmm.
do a minority program. It was through this association, and I'm the chairperson of that, we says, rather than do it individually, why don't we do it collectively?
I got you.
So I started meeting with these gentlemen, and just so happy to know all of them. You know, some of them call me sis, and
mm-hmm,
some
mm-hmm.
say, I'm so proud of what you're doing. And I love telling other women that when you show who you are, be proud of who you are, don't feel inferior because you're the only one. You could be the only woman. You could be the only black person, which in my case was quite evident throughout my early years. Think about it. I started at GM in 1968. And, you know, here we are in 2022. So that's quite a distance of time that I've traveled. But it has been a blessing, and I've learned so many things. But it's nice to go out and, you know, I see Dave Bing somewhere, and he'll say, "Hey, sis, how you doing?" And, you know, he'll give me a hug or something because, you know, I'm friends with all of these people. And it's just an amazing feeling that I've earned their respect because I have earned some knowledge. Throughout the years, they've given me tidbits of things that I could do, collaborations on what we might be able to do together. And so it's been great because I've always been eager to learn more. You know, like, how do you do that? Why do you do that? Did you consider this or that? I ask a lot of questions.
Final question, Ms. Abraham. When you're not being the CEO, founder, and president of your company, what do you like to do?
Well, now that COVID is subsiding a little bit, I know it's not over. I'm really looking forward to traveling again. I got tons of miles to use, but I do like to travel. I like to go many places. You know, right before COVID, I went to Italy and Croatia, and I went on a sailboat with strangers I didn't know, except for one person. I mean, all these experiences, I want to have experiences. I want to be able to travel, and I love being at home. I love beautiful plants and flowers and just kind of relaxing. And I love Jeanette. I think she's the coolest person ever. I do whatever I can for that woman.
I know that's
speaking
right.
In the third person, you know, I just really, I love relaxation. And people say, well, when are you going to retire or slow down? Well, I don't know. I feel pretty good right now. But I'm always looking and planning for my future so that I can have a good life. For however long life has left for me, I'm going to continue to enjoy it and relax. I don't work on the weekends, and I spend time with my granddaughter because she's my only grandchild, and I'm her only grandmother, and I want to create memories with her. So I enjoy doing that as well.
Well, Ms. Abraham, I'd like to thank you for your time, your energy, your heavy lifting, and the things that you've done thus far, and also being
thank
a
you.
Proud dough girl.
Yes. People say, what is a dough girl? I say, well, you just have to know.
You just have to know.
You know, you just have to know. If you went to Pershing, you would know that.
Jeanette Abraham, founder, president, and CEO of JMA Global, LLC. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Also, you can listen to a special collection of In Black America programs at American Archive of Public Broadcasting. That's americanarchives.org. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny L. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.
That was In Black America for this Wednesday, and you can hear the program again on Sunday morning at 5 a.m., right before the Jazz Corner. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. This is In Black America and Ebony Spectrum for Wednesday, the 30th of August 2023. We have lots of thoughts and news clips for you, so stay with us.
Honestly, I'm just trying to give y'all a little bit of truth and a little bit of lie. Like I said, I'm dropping breadcrumbs, and it's up for you to go on out there and find the truth for yourself, you know. Yeah, I said we was all under the spell, all religion, the legion of lies that has been casted upon you time and time again to keep you enslaved spiritually under a system that feeds off you like a bunch of vampires. That's why in your church when you're taking them communion and they're saying, drink my blood and eat my flesh. Now, what God you really know do that? They really got y'all all manipulated, thinking that this God you worshiping is something that's here to save your soul. One baby say, well, mama, then who should we pray to? You know, I say this, we under the spell because the English language is the most craziest language in the world. You can say one word and it mean 4 or 5 different things. So, like the word pray, you say praying, you think you're praying, but something is actually praying on you. And then they say, well, mama, if Jesus was up there hanging on the cross, who was he praying to? Well, don't y'all say that Jesus is God manifested in the flesh? So if God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit is all the same thing, you tell me, who was he praying to? And after a while, he got a little upset because why hast thou forsaken me? So somebody talked him into being up there. First of all, I want to know, why does God always sacrificing children? Sacrificing his only begotten son. Baby, would you sacrifice your child for somebody else talking about forgiveness of your sins? You responsible for your own sins. These babies born into this world, only thing they did was just come out your ass, and the first thing they telling you is your baby born into sin. Then you rest the child on up to the church so that pastor could perform a ritual over your baby. They always after the babies. All of them. Look at that Roman Catholic Church now. All them pedophiles up in there doing that thing to them altar boys. All this years, all this time, they've been doing the wicked things in your mama and them. You know about it. You ain't do nothing about it, though, because in your eyes, that man represents God. That man don't represent no God. All this shit is a lie. Legion of lies, they call religion, and it's a spell. Using through languages and rituals done to you over and over. Now you participate in the damn thing over and over and wonder why your life don't get better. Soon as you wake up, first thing you say is good morning. Baby, what's good about morning? You waking up moaning. Oh, it ain't that morning. Well, which morning it is? The bright in the morning star that they call Jesus. And then another chapter over there in Isaiah, they call you Lucifer. Oh, you the son of the morning. Spelt the same way. Last time I checked, the sun up in the sky don't mourn. It rises. But y'all just don't get it. Y'all just don't get it. Even everything is in your face right now. The West is falling, baby. The West is falling because your boys had your time to rule. You did a bunch of wicked things. Came over here talking about freedom and liberation and major holidays on Independence Day while you had slaves in the back. Talk about thou should not commit adultery, but half of y'all slaves was going into the slave quarters in the middle of the night raping them young black girls. Imagine the psychology that white woman had to look at this man rape these women. And they have babies by these women, all these mulatto children running around here knowing goddamn well they all came from her husband. So she took her anger out on the black woman. See, that wedge was driven between us a long time ago because he don't respect your ass either. He used to call you a witch up there in Boston, was burning your asses at the stake, calling you things that you were just practicing nature. And you got all that knowledge from the black women that showed you some things. See, now y'all feeling the pain and the wrath because your government done turned on you too. A few years back, y'all was talking about make America great again. Y'all was watching them police brutalize them boys time and time again. All you did was turn the blind eye because you knew you conditioned us to turn the other cheek. There's a reckoning coming to this country because you spilt a lot of blood of my people on this soil. Now the rocks is crying out. Y'all know what I'm talking about is true. Look what happened down there the other day in Montgomery, Alabama. All through the South, our blood is saturating this earth. Saturating the soil so deep. You bury some of our towns and make your man-made lakes and you kill so many people. The souls The souls are still there crying out, calling for justice. And it's coming. So you think we all gonna raise up and do a race war? No, nature is doing quite a good job at it herself. There's tornadoes, it's 5-10 miles wide, leveling your whole town. Hurricanes coming. Y'all forgot last year the whole country was under 0 degrees during your winter holiday called Christmas. I told you all these holidays are lined up, certain alignments in the star like your solstices. But you holding on to all this shit so tight because of fear. They instilled all of this shit in you. They raped it into you. They molested it into you. And you just don't know how to let it go because they told you to fear God. That same God in that Bible, in the first your commandments, tell you thou shalt not kill. And then a few chapters down the road, he don't tell David to go in there and kill this whole village and take the women and children. What? Make that make sense? That's a hypocrite if you ask me. And you say, oh my God, that's blasphemy. Let me tell you something. The same people who oppressed my people and wrote in your book of laws that we ain't no more than 3/5 a human being, ain't no way in hell in your soul you can teach me about God. You don't even know what the true and living God is. Now, I'm going to tell you, I ain't no race, and this ain't all about black and white. This is about wrong and right. Y'all turned a blind eye for too long. Now the walls of Jericho is coming on down. Because it's time. I told you we at the end of this age and the beginning of a new one. So y'all can hold on to this shit all you want. Hell, they already told you that the spell is over when Lizzie over there died and they snapped the wand and put it right on her casket for the whole world to see. Most of y'all missed that. Went right over your head. Now what queen you know? All the queens I know carry scepters or staffs. This one had a wand. Only people I know that carry wands is witches and warlocks. See, they putting everything right in front of your face because it's revelation. You thinking it's a great war of Armageddon, but it means to reveal, to awaken. Your pole shifts is that spinal cord that go up, have all the nerves connected to, that go up to your brain that's sparking a whole new form of consciousness in you. That's your great awakening. And the carbon footprint they talking about is you. Melanated people, you the carbon. Y'all need to wake on up now, because it's time. There's a reckoning coming, and some of it is coming for people that just look like me too. And some people who gonna be, won't be the one to help you, may not look like you. See, y'all all thinking it's about bloodlines and your 12 tribes. But no, sometimes it could be about them blood types. They got you focusing on the wrong thing. I dropped a lot of breadcrumbs in this video, baby. Y'all sit back and y'all ponder on all the things I'm talking about. Because time's just about up. Sure is. Why you think they disclosing all this information about UFOs and things like that? What you think is up in them skies, baby? You think you the only life forms in this whole galaxy and universe? That's like the rock telling the pebble we the only ones on the beach. Y'all need to think about some of the things I'm saying and ponder on it. Let it be food for thought for you. Because it's time to stop messing around, get your lives together and get your house in order. All right now, Mama T, y'all be good. Bye.
That was something that came across my desk this week from one of our listeners. And it's called When Grandma Speaks, You Listen.
I'm going to keep it black, but I'm going to keep it brief.
We going to keep it black,
but we going to keep it brief.
So I'm going to keep it black, but I'm going to keep it brief.
And I'm going to keep it black, but I'm going to keep it brief.
I'm going to keep it black, but I'm going to keep it brief.
And we're going to keep it black like we always do, but we're going to keep it brief.
America is not, nor has it ever been, a meritocracy. It doesn't matter that Justice Clarence Thomas has been on record him damn self praising affirmative action for his successes. It doesn't matter that we have data on what happens when affirmative action is banned.
We decided to bring a discussion about black love to the parking lot.
We do this remembering that the black family was purposefully dismantled and destroyed.
Yes, and we do that in the face of society trying to base beauty on European standards, which we know we don't look like nothing like no European. You can't tell me my black wife ain't fine.
You talking good, honey.
With her thick ass thighs and booty juicy and jiggly.
Okay, baby, that is enough.
In 2020, Key and Peele released a sketch called Is That Country Song Racist? And it's almost creepy how well it predicts exactly what's going on right now. And to describe what happens in the sketch, the YouTube description says, a man plays some country tunes for his new neighbor, but they disagree about the music's subtext. Just because someone says something they did is not racist does not mean it's true. And just because someone doesn't say the N-word or explicitly use the word black doesn't mean what they're doing isn't racist.
Go ahead and chew on that, honey.
Law enforcement don't really treat reports about missing black women, black children, or black men the same way they do some other folks. Which is crazy to me considering the fact that the Supreme Court just tried to pimp us into believing that we colorly blind. But what I also noticed is that color didn't even really become the it girl until the narrative switched to if 1 + 1 = 2 and 2 + 2, how come nobody else called in talking about they seen a missing toddler on the highway?
We've got to discuss a historical moment in our community. I call it the great ass whoop awakening of the 21st century. Bow, 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 bow. I do not condone violence, but I am a fan of self-defense. A big fan. Especially when a chair is involved, honey, because I like to defend myself and then quickly start up a game of spades.
How does not being homophobic benefit the black community? And how does being pro-LGBTQIA+ benefit the black family? This queer antagonistic discourse and these ideas of family, as exemplified in that tweet, are instruments of white supremacy meant to devalue the contributions of black queer folk to the black collective struggle for liberation.
Class dismissed, how today you deserve.
That was this week's Keeping It Black, But Keeping It Brief.
Turning now to a violent situation that could have ended much worse. An armed man in Pittsburgh held police at bay for hours after being served an eviction notice. Trevor Ault is on the scene for us there. Good morning, Trevor.
Good morning, Robin. And you can see the remnants of this shootout behind me. Authorities say this is the house where the suspect was inside, firing in those repeated extended bursts. Almost every window was shot out, and there are too many bullet holes to count, as this neighborhood was on lockdown for essentially the entire day.
A six-hour standoff brought this Pittsburgh neighborhood to a terrifying halt Wednesday.
We have multiple shots fired, multiple shots fired.
Hundreds of shots fired between authorities and a suspect now identified as 63-year-old William Hardison after sheriff's deputies attempted to serve an eviction notice. Investigators say Hardison never responded to their attempts to communicate. Instead, he fired bullets in repeated extended bursts from the first and second floor of the home, firing repeatedly at officers, even shooting down police drones. A SWAT team soon arriving, pulling out neighbors in the crossfire. The gunman's son, speaking to ABC affiliate WTAE, pleading with his father to surrender.
Please give up. You have children and grandchildren. I love you dearly. Please stand down.
Late into the afternoon, the sheriff announcing Hardison had died inside the home.
And the sheriff tells me they did have reason to believe this could be a particularly challenging eviction. They even brought 7 deputies here yesterday to execute it, which is far more than usual. But he stressed they had no idea that what transpired would actually happen. And miraculously, though, we do have to note in those hundreds of bullets, no bystanders were wounded. Rebecca?
Thank goodness for that. Okay, Trevor Ault. Thank you, Trevor.
What caused William Hardison to fire thousands of shots after sheriff's deputies showed up to evict him? It's a question many are trying to answer as Garfield and neighboring communities try to deal with the trauma of that long standoff yesterday.
KDK lead investigator Andy Sheehan is working to learn more about who Hardison was and why he believed he was above the law.
Law enforcement sources tell me that William Hardison had 15 guns in this house and an unlimited supply of ammunition, which he used in the misguided belief that the laws of the United States did not apply to him and this house was rightfully his. This is William Hardison 4 years ago during a traffic stop by police on the north side. He tells them he is a Moor, a descendant of Morocco, a country which he says owns the United States, and as such, the laws of this country do not apply to him. Court records show he has been cited more than 30 times in the past 15 years for not having a license or registration. And here he tells police they have no jurisdiction over him. He considers himself what is known as a sovereign citizen above the law.
I consider them outlaws. That's how I best describe sovereign citizens. They're people who think they're above the law, they don't have to follow the law, and so they behave accordingly.
Chatham University professor Christine Sarcheski believes Hardison's Moroccan heritage and sovereign citizen beliefs may have led to yesterday's fatal confrontation with police. She says Moorish sovereign citizens believe everything in the U.S. is rightfully theirs.
Which sometimes leads to the squatting situations where they think that they own that house.
Court records show the house was owned by Hardison and his brother Joseph. But when Joseph died in March of 2021, William quit paying the mortgage, and the house was sold in March to a limited liability corporation called 907 East Street. William filed papers in federal court accusing the new owners of fraud and trespassing, maintaining the house was still his and refusing to leave, despite a judge's order to do so.
I expected something like that from him. He was a squatter.
And according to law enforcement sources, he had his brother's 15 handguns and a mountain of ammunition on the ready.
He said they did his brother wrong, but they're not going to do that to me. I got something for them.
Miraculously, no law enforcement officer or citizen would be seriously injured in this melee, though William Hardison would lose his life, all on the mistaken belief that the laws of this country did not apply to him. Reporting in Garfield, Andy Sheehan, KDK News.
The Sheriff's Department says this was not the first time that Hardison had been through an eviction process.
Yeah, we've learned he was evicted from a home on the north side last fall.
Right now, we're going to take some time and read the following piece from the editorial board from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, dated August 27th, 2023. And it addresses the Garfield shootout. And the editorial reads, "Garfield shootout never should have happened. Wednesday's shootout and standoff in Garfield endangered the lives of dozens of neighbors and law enforcement officers. As more information trickles in about the gunman and his previous interactions with the law enforcement and other city authorities, in the coming days and weeks, there must be a comprehensive and transparent accounting of how such a dangerously unstable situation developed. Specifically, city and county officials must look closely at their programs and policies to understand what interventions were attempted, how they failed, and whether new programs and procedures are necessary to help or to stop people who are spiraling out of control. Because a war zone shootout like this cannot be allowed to happen again. No easy answers. It's far too early to draw comprehensive lessons from the tragic story of William Hardison. But for what we already know, we can arrive at one clear conclusion. This incident in the years that led up to it does not fit any simple ideological narrative. As of this writing, information continues to accumulate, but much of it is sketchy, and we will relate only to what can be known for sure as of Friday afternoon. Hardison was living in a Garfield house that did not, as a matter of law, belong to him. The modest Broad Street Town Hall had belonged to his brother Joseph until his death in 2021. Earlier this year, a limited liability corporation named 907 East Street purchased a home for $25,000 and sought to evict Hardison in May. He refused to leave, and so 907 East Street received the court order for his ejection at 10:30 a.m. on August 23rd. Hardison had written numerous statements on the front of the house that asserted his rights to the property and its antipathy for police. Law enforcement indicated in the aftermath that they did not expect the level of resistance they received, but neighbors did notice Hardison collecting worrying supplies like gasoline. The fact that that seven sheriff deputies arrived on Wednesday morning for the ejection was unusual and indicates that Hardison was considered a potentially difficult subject. For some time, Hardison had identified with the More Sovereign Citizen Movement, whose adherents assert that they are not subject to the laws of the United States. Over the past 20 years, he had amassed 42 criminal charges or citations, mostly for vehicle violations such as driving an unregistered and uninsured vehicle without a license. It is clear that, as a matter of principle, he did not recognize the authority of the law. The die had been cast. Given what we know of Hardison's beliefs and the arsenal he had collected, it is fair to say by the time deputies arrived at 4817 Broad Street on Wednesday morning, the result was preordained. Law enforcement as well as neighbors report that he had been firing as soon as officers entered the house. De-escalation was no longer an option. By the end of the ordeal, more than 70 law enforcement officers, including nearly 50 Pittsburgh police officers, had fired their weapons. At least half a dozen agencies had participated. Thousands of rounds had ricocheted through the neighborhood. This suggests a level of chaos that put many dangers in danger. It's a miracle that no one but Hardison was seriously injured. Pittsburgh and Allegheny County police should closely study this incident to determine what procedures need to be tightened to ensure a disciplined approach to such engagements. More importantly, however, authorities at every level need to study this episode to understand how it got to this point where bloodshed was inevitable. This should have never happened and mustn't happen again. Early interventions. From both a law enforcement and social services perspective, the events of Wednesday must be seen as a failure. Once seven armed deputies have arrived at a house in order to drag a person out, whether or not he has an arsenal, multiple systems have broken down. Several questions must be answered to understand how to avoid this outcome in the future. It is clear that Hardison was on the radar of law enforcement for years. Did the city of Department of Public Safety ever communicate concerns about him to other agencies in the city, the county, or the private sector that specialize in social services and mental health interventions? Did agencies offer resources for alternative housing, not just in anticipation of Hardison's ejection, but at any time during his squatting? It is possible, even likely, that Hardison's peculiar beliefs would have prohibited him from accepting any of this assistance. Those same beliefs led him to live essentially outside the law for at least the past several years. Multiple driver's license offenses usually result in fines and even incarceration, especially if the fines go unpaid, which we can assume they did unless someone covered him. Why did none of Hardison's citations result in any real consequences? And despite his record, how did he collect so many guns? Wednesday's violent chaos was the last resort outcome that should have been avoided at all costs. William Hardison may have been the hardest of hard cases, but at some point, there must have been an off-ramp. Going back and finding it will help ensure something like this will never happen again. And that was published by the Post-Gazette Editorial Board, and it was first published August 27, 2023 at 5:30 a.m. So a lot of unanswered questions involving this situation. And the incident leaves a lot of people questioning. And the one statement that keeps coming up time and time again, this should not be allowed to happen again. This cannot allow to be happen again. This won't be allowed to happen again. All of these different statements. Very interesting. Very interesting news coverage. I didn't see one, not that it mattered, but I didn't see one black reporter on the case in Garfield on any of the stations, I don't believe, that were covering what happened this past Wednesday. But it did make the national news, and a lot of people were questioning what was going on here in Pittsburgh. Thanks to Rick for sending that to me so I could read that over to all of you folks in our audience.
Right, we just got off the phone with the son of the suspect. Now, the suspect's name is William Hardison. He is 63 years old. His son is also named William Hardison. He is 40 years old. Now, the suspect's son is a truck driver. He's based in Georgia. We spoke with him while he was on a route. He was actually stopped in Ohio, and he spoke with us about the trauma that he and his family are going through and their efforts to try to reach out to their father about this whole incident. Let's play a little bit of what he had to say.
Hey, Dad, please surrender. Please give up. You have children and grandchildren. I love you dearly. Please stand down.
What's he like as a person?
He's a very stern individual. You know, he's a man's man. You know what I mean? But he stands on what he believes in. And when he believes in something, he's going to fight tooth and nail about it. You know, but he's a great person outside of that. You know what I mean? So,
based on what we were talking about earlier, does he believe that this house rightfully belongs to him?
Yes, very much so.
Why is that?
Because my uncle, you know, my uncle passed away. You know what I mean? And you know that, you know, he, like I said, he only had a few more years left to pay on the house. You know what I mean? So why would they sell it to someone for $25,000? When hundreds of thousands of dollars they put into that house. You know what I mean? They just redid the house. They just remodeled the house in the process of him passing away.
And behind me now we can hear the sound of some shots being fired in the distance, maybe a flashbang to try to draw out Mr. Hardison. You heard his son there talk about the transaction, the sale of the house, and this is a very tangled family story. What happened was, the house was owned by the suspect's brother. Now, he died last year, and when he died, the will turned the house over to the father of the suspect, William Hardison, and his brother. Now, the father then sold the house to a local real estate company, and they are the company that filed the eviction proceedings against William Hardison, the 63-year-old William Hardison, who is still barricaded inside the house. That process started earlier this year. William Hardison has been fighting this process and refusing to leave the house. According to the court records, he has been in the house now for 5 months without paying rent, and that is what led the authorities, a judge, to order the eviction to happen this morning at 10:30. Shortly after that is when the gunfire broke out. But as you heard from William Hardison's son, the senior William Hardison believed that he deserved the house, and there was some bad blood between the father and the brother who ended up taking over the house. And so there's, again, a very tangled family story, but right now what you have is a family down in Georgia who is concerned about Mr. Hardison here, as well as their own children and grandchildren who are very concerned watching this whole situation unfold. Back to you.
Paul, have they been able to speak with him at all?
No, they have tried. Just moments ago, I heard from Teresa Hardison, the daughter-in-law. She said her husband, who you heard during that interview, he has been speaking with one of the negotiators in this case. So they're trying to get him in contact with his father. They've been trying repeatedly throughout the day to reach out to him, but they have not been able to.
And we had also heard from some other sources, Paul, that this person, Mr. Hardison, who's holed up in the house, is a military veteran who just lost his brother. So that does sort of check out with what we've heard in the past maybe hour or so about the individual that police are trying to extricate from this building. We showed a picture of, I think it was Mr. Hardison's son and his daughter-in-law there. You know, if you can, Paul, just kind of put into words what that family is going through right now, knowing that their father is at the center of this.
Well, they're very emotional about this. They're obviously very concerned about him. They acknowledge he's had some problems with the law in the past. He's never done any hard prison time. He's been mainly involved in some minor criminal activity. But their main concern now is that he get out safe and he surrender, and they've been trying to push him to surrender. And that's why they wanted to speak with me, in order to try to get the word out to him that he needed to get out for the sake of his family, himself, and his grandchildren.
WRCT Pittsburgh.
Soldiers in the army, I just love the idea with front and center. I serve humanity and praise Rastafari's name. What's happening around us? Hatred, bigotry, and grudge. Let's get together, starting today. Hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder, find a better way. Just love, peace and love.